Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at NewBalance.com.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
Welcome to the Behind the Racket Pod, the podcast taking you behind the racket with today's top tennis players and biggest issues facing the sport.
Behind the Racket is a community to give fans and players in the world of tennis the opportunity to open up like they have never done before.
Visit BehindTheRacket.com for the latest stories, merch, as well as direct links to all of the latest podcasts. It can also be found on iTunes, Google Play, Pandora, Stitcher, and wherever you find your podcasts. Download the episodes and make sure to leave a review.
And we want you to be a part of the conversation. Find me at NoahRubin33 or Mike at MikeCTennis on all forms of social media. You can also learn more at BehindTheRacket.com or MikeCTennis.com.
Special thanks to my sponsor, New Balance. Visit their latest shoes and styles at NewBalance.com and learn more about their program of giving back at #NBGivesBack.
You can also help support the podcast by visiting patreon.com/behindtheracketpod and receive rewards from our travels around the world. And now,
another episode of the podcast is underway. Noah Rubin, he is on his way to a one-year-old birthday party in just a couple of minutes. And right now I can see him. He's wearing a very wonderful flowered shirt, a collared shirt.
You said you weren't going to bring it up. Well, you said that. That was the first thing. It was the first thing. Don't bring up the shirt. Brings up the shirt.
I mean, it's lovely.
Do you have any skills?
Not really.
Okay.
I think that's pretty clear. What do you got planned? What did you buy for the one-year-old
for this birthday? Absolutely nothing.
What did Jamie
actually
buy for the one-year-old?
I actually spoke about this. If I ever have a child of my own,
uh-huh,
a one-year-old birthday party. I get it's for the parents, but...
Oh, come on.
You had one?
Yeah, for Marnie, sure.
Yeah.
She had a great time.
She had a great time?
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Well, all these people who were wanting to play with her and do different things and all these new toys... It's fantastic.
Sounds like a nightmare.
Explains so much about you. How's the training? How's the body? How's
Body's
the brain?
Okay. Brain is, you know, just glorious. It's a wonderful mystery ride. Hard courts hurt a lot everywhere. Mm-hmm. And that's that. I don't know what else to say, really. I used to slide, and then I used to play a match, and then after that I would be okay. And now I play a match, and it's not okay anymore.
So you're saying you're not able to slide as much? Is that what you're...
I'm saying that it hurts more on the old soul.
Mm. You're how old?
26.
Okay. Okay, just keep that in mind. I have a couple of points that I would like for us to discuss.
I have points, too. Do you know Wimbledon's taking place right now?
I did. I watched some yesterday. I watched some of Nick Kyrgios and Stefanos Tsitsipas, which is what I wanted to talk about.
Yeah. No, I was there too. Can we... I think we're done arguing because I still see it on Twitter. He's entertaining. I'm not saying he's a good person. We don't have to talk about if he's a good person or not, but are we going to argue still at this point if he's entertaining or not?
Apparently so.
Do you? Which side are you following?
I fall on the same side as you.
Oh, okay. I mean, I get it. There's a lot of complaining, and he goes a lot of different directions, but is there still time to to say that he's not bringing in people?
Yeah, here's the issue, and I think this is, you know, kind of a bigger picture. What does need to be discussed here is enforcement of rules.
Mm-hmm.
Stefanos, after the match, referred to Kyrgios as being a bully.
Yeah.
I think there's some validity to that.
Right.
Maybe bully's not the right word, but I do think there's some, you know, Nick pushes boundaries, crosses lines because there is no actual enforcement of rules. And, you know, that this is tennis, right? You do whatever you can to beat the person on the other side of the net. And Nick is very good at that. And maybe pushes beyond what are quote unquote rules, but it's not enforced. None of it is enforced. It's all these A, unwritten rules, and B, ones that are not, a chair umpire is not going to actually enforce. You know, if you're talking to somebody on the other side of the net, you're not going to say anything because you don't want it to, like, you don't want the chair to actually get involved in the match. So I think Nick is wildly entertaining. I've said before that, frankly, John McEnroe and his outbursts were how I got actually engaged with the sport back in, you know, the early 80s. And it's the same thing here, right? There's the level of entertainment. It's going to be, some of it's going to be on TikTok, whereas Stefano Tsitsipas, one-handed backhand down the line, is not.
Right.
But
yeah, it's difficult.
Sorry to interrupt, Noah. There does need to be some level of enforcement of rules. And this is where it gets really complex, right? I mean, there's no way around it. Like, how do you stick to that 25-second guideline in between points if Nick Kyrgios is arguing and yelling about how he wants a supervisor because Stefanos hit something into the stands, which also needs to be enforced. There needs to be a very strict understanding of you hit a ball into the sidelines, even if it doesn't hit somebody, you're out. Yeah. Get out. Like, we're so soft on these rules. And so as a result, their players are playing, you know, like a player like Steph is playing by what he thinks are the rules. Nick is playing by what he thinks are the rules. Both of them are probably correct in their own understanding of it.
Right. Yeah. There's almost no how-to anymore.
Correct.
Of how to go about a match. I'm actually shocked that with all the chair umpires that Nick has played in front of and, you know, thrown his antics at,
yeah,
that no chair umpire has kind of taken that, I'm going to be bigger than you and scarier than you. I know it's funny. I'm just, sure. I don't know where that line is for the chair, but to kind of be like, no, Nick, shut the fuck up. Right. Nobody can hear us right now. I'm in your face. You shut the fuck up and go and play tennis. Like, I'm shocked that that's never really happened. Everybody kind of takes a toll, and then you see the chair umpire gets exhausted and is like, okay, now I'm going to say something and it's not going to come out well. But it's like they've never taken the next step and said, no, Nick, you're done here. You're either going to walk off the court. I'm going to keep – because they have the initiative to say, okay, now that's a warning. Now it's a point penalty. That's a game, a match. And that's it. And kick them off the court. See what happens.
Frankly, if that starts happening, the entertainment value is still there.
100%. The antics will still – if you think Nick is going to leave that court quietly after, I mean, that's – you know, that's start the show, start the clock. I mean, you know, it doesn't have to be all the time. And for some things, there's definitely no need. But if it's really taking away from the tennis, which I sadly did not have time yesterday to watch the match, very disappointed. But I saw the highlights, and seeing how people reacted was – it did at times actually take away from the tennis. And, you know, Rothenberg, another one, said, you know, I think we forget how good Nick is at tennis because there's so much – other things going on, you know, so many other things going on. So I always wish somebody just kind of took that step into him and almost, you know, shouldered him a little bit and said, hey, this is what's happening.
Well, on top of it, I think, you know, frankly, Steph is one of those opponents who in that type of a matchup with all of that going on, he will not handle it well. And I think Nick knows that and obviously took advantage of that again, because he's very comfortable, A, with his tennis, where his game is at right now, and B, with the fact that he can push and push and push and knows that Steph is an opponent who's not going to give it back. And I guess I want to say again, I don't fault Nick very much here. He is again going...
It's his book.
He's being allowed to go, right? And with the fact that nobody is saying... Here is the consequence of you going here. Keep going, man. Like, if nobody says anything, you keep going and keep, you know, doing your thing, because your job is to beat the other person over there on the other side of the net. If nobody says no, you go.
If the gates are open.
Yeah.
Yeah. No,
Who's the most difficult opponent in that regard that you've competed against as a player?
He was at the top of it. I don't remember being so out of a match at 5-all in the first.
Where was it?
That was Atlanta a few years ago.
Okay.
And, you know, first of all, he did all his stuff. He aced me multiple times with different serves. Karlovich, Sharapova, and Fed. And he mimics to a T and aces. Because, I mean, people actually went against us. He definitely has one of the best serves of all time.
Sure.
I mean, he could hit the spots. But being at 5-all in the first with him... And I was like, I was not really, and I was in probably the most mentally stable point of my tennis career.
Yeah.
And I did not know what was happening. I didn't know where I was.
Yeah.
Because I was looking over and he wasn't there, whether I was boring him with my tennis or whatever the case may be, he wasn't there. And it felt like he was doing other things at the same time. So, you know, you go to a Stefanos who definitely doesn't deal with that very well.
Yeah.
And ironically, most of the rules are named after
him, right.
You know. I've been there. I understand the situation. You know, when I'm playing my best, the focus is there. And when I have something that's completely taking me out of that realm and it's not 6-2 in my direction, you know, it's 5-all, it's a very tough situation. I mean, even Bublik was there. I played him along to – fuck, that was – Newport Beach, saved a few match points against it, was 6-1/3. And it's, we're at like, I don't know, I'm making up a score, like 4-all in the third. And it's like, it's, you know, we're having a little, we're on a merry-go-round and we're just, and I'm just like, what, how do you do this?
Yeah.
How do you do it? So it's been interesting to kind of see those guys develop. I mean, there's a reason in my head, I call it, they have to do this.
Yeah.
You know, people say this is what they want to do. I say it's what they have to do to be a, in this sport, doing what they want to do, they have to play this role, and they do it, and they do it well.
It's you know, somebody we both know well, Stefan Kozlov. Stefan always has to play when he's at his best. I should put it that way. When he's at his best, he's on the edge, right?
Yes.
There's that border of like being disrespectful to your opponent, getting in their head a little bit, but like feeling like, you know, Koz looks like there's a chip on his shoulder, and so like, fuck you, man. Like, I'm gonna push every boundary I can. That's when he is at his best, and I think it's the same for Nick, right?
Yeah.
Two guys.
He has to make his own narrative to get himself to a point of, I either want to fucking kick the shit out of you.
Yeah.
And do that in tennis terms, you know. And
and
Kozlov's an interesting one, because when you know he was at his best, he was doing that in practice.
Yeah.
And I looked over and I'm like, why? But he had to. He had to get himself in that state of mind in practice to make sure that it was there during the matches. And whether it was me or watching him play Tiafo, which was a great, you know, just a character battle. You know, you have those and you're like – and I remember talking to Steph when he was just before he kind of had that next breakthrough and coming back to it. I was like, Steph, I almost missed that.
Yeah.
You were a complete piece of shit.
Yeah.
And you were toying with me and – but now I miss that for you. I want you to get that. So it was like, how does – and if Nick can't find that, which has to be – he has to have a lot more check marks to bring that out. Like Stefan and I, it could be him and I playing on court 22 in front of nobody.
Yeah.
I think Nick needs the fans. He needs the stage.
100%.
He needs the player that he's playing against. It can't just be a guy that's 130 in the world.
Yeah.
So it's
Sock's the same way. I mean, Sock, we talked about it before, that the first couple rounds of challengers have always been so hard for him because, it's impossible for him to really find that edge that he needs to play with when you're in front of three people, you know, in some smaller city. It's hard for him to do. I think that's another great example of it. But I agree with you, Noah. I think there's plenty of room in the tennis ecosystem for these types of human beings, these types of characters, these types of quote unquote villains. As I said earlier, John McEnroe brought me into the sport because the first thing I saw, you know, the TikTok of 1982 was ESPN Sports Center. You saw the highlights over and over again of McEnroe doing his thing, or Jimmy Connors screaming at people, and you're like,
Question,
oh,
though,
this
was
cool.
Is it true that the McEnroe brothers were looking down upon Nick's antics?
Yeah, that's what I didn't hear it.
Okay.
But yes, I mean, I saw that all over social media yesterday that, yeah. That,
okay, not hypocritical, right.
Yeah, well Patrick was never, Pat okay. was no, in Pat, his playing
yeah,
days.
Pat was fine. Yeah.
But yeah, John specifically, for him to call out antics is is crazy to me because he was so, I don't know, it's different 40 years on, right? Like,
right.
Nick's antics in 1982 would be just outlandish and like, get him out of here, right? But nowadays, like more and more is allowed and more is open because it is type of an entertainment component to it. And right. And Nick brought it up yesterday, and we'll move on here. But Nick brought it up yesterday when he plays basketball back in Australia when he goes home and plays in some of those like summer league type things with guys who are playing in the Australian basketball leagues. This is basic.
Yeah,
I mean the trash talk at the NBA level is like the worst thing ever in tennis. You know what I mean? Right. It's and
we've
so
we've spoken about that. There's I think there's so much more room for trash talk. I mean, we have it all the time in practice. I think it, but again, it comes all the way back around to where's the line? Yes. Where does the line get drawn?
Correct.
Is it ball into, you know, the stadium? Is it Nick taking 12 minutes to speak and wants to see all the supervisors, whatever the fuck that means?
Right.
You know what? You know, where is that line? And that's what we need. I mean, the basketball players. Actually, I think it's gotten a little bit softer in their, you know, calling of rules, but they know the line. They know what's going to happen, and that's what it is.
And
but
we don't in this sport.
No, we don't. Question for you, though, kind of sidetracking, but on the same topic, is we're in the later rounds. Mm-hmm. It's a very interesting draw we have in front of us.
Yeah.
What does Nick going forward look like? Because I've seen him quiet down when he actually gets nervous, when he realizes that something larger is on the line.
I'm actually, as we're doing this, I'm pulling up the draw because I want to make sure I look at this right of where he is. He's got Nakashima next, and then Garin Dimonar before he plays either, you would guess, Fritz or Nadal.
Right. So Nakashima's got to be a nightmare for him because Nakashima is not going to play into any of his games, you would think, for the most part.
I don't know that. I think it's within the realm of possibility, considering it's the first time being this deep in a Grand Slam, that Brandon's got some nerves engaged against Nick when he is at his full throat. That could be a really difficult ask for Brandon.
I'm not saying tennis wise. I'm just saying in the antics realm.
I mean, actually.
Oh, okay. You think that you could see a different side?
I could see that being very challenging for Brandon Nakashima for sure. I think it's within the realm of possibility. Yes. But then.
And then he respects Dimonar if he gets to play Dimonar, and you never know.
I don't.
I
think it would be a big deal if Nick Kyrgios wins the slam. I think it would be a massive thing for the men's side of our sport. But because, again, when it gets down to it, the guy draws attention to the sport, and that's what we need to continue growth.
It's funny because I think about Nadal Kyrgios. That would be semis, you said?
That would be semis, yeah.
It would bring out the best in both of them.
Yes, it would.
Because Nadal fucking does not want to lose to Nick.
Correct.
Does not want to lose. And then Nick is like, I get to play Nadal now. So I actually think the next few matches are probably tougher for Nick.
I think so
than,
too.
Than Nadal because in his head he doesn't have much to lose at that point.
Correct. I think let's just say Dimonar Nadal are the next after Nakashima. That would be the three to get to the finals. And I think each one. Nakashima, the play style is going to be challenging for Nick. Dimonar, he respects Dimonar. That's challenge. Yeah. And then there's Nadal, and then potentially Djokovic. That would be your.
Yeah.
That would be fun. That would be a fun watch.
That would be. That's enough to be said right there.
Yeah.
The fact that we want that so bad.
Yeah.
For the sport, but.
Yeah. Mixed in there, by the way, Jason Kubler playing Taylor Fritz next, and. Flippin' Kubler owes us a podcast.
That goes into one thing I want to talk about. We're not going to ask him for a podcast again because we were accepted but denied.
Oh, he knows he owes me.
He knows
he actually
us.
Knows. The last thing he said to me was, I know I owe you a podcast, and then he left for Wimbledon. So
saw on Twitter the Monday schedule.
Okay.
At the same time that I saw Federer.
Yeah, being introduced.
Majestically.
Yeah.
Walk onto stadium court. Is it exciting? Is the Monday schedule exciting enough for tennis right now?
How do you mean that?
I mean that in that these are most of the guys that you and I know very well through Challenger Tours for the most part. And I'm
you're talking about on the men's side specifically?
Specifically.
Okay,
right
so
now.
So the men's matches in that regard are?
Yes.
Center court, Nakashima, Kyrgios, Botic, and Rafa.
Mm-hmm.
Court one has Kubler, Fritz.
Mm-hmm.
Court two has Garin, Dimonar.
Mm-hmm.
No. I mean.
Yeah.
It's
a topic we brought up and when I was salivating over Roger Federer.
Yeah.
Are there enough people that transcend the sport of tennis within a group like that? And I guess the second question was going back to when Berdych was consistently at this, was that more exciting or was it not? Or was it just, you know, I keep trying to think back to that.
Yeah, it's a complex question, Noah, because
I love when you use my name.
For 20 years, right, we've had the three at the top. So, you know, quote unquote, excitement has been defined by Rafa, Novak, and Raj. And so, yeah, I mean, Berdych Anderson didn't move the needle. Berdych Ferrer didn't quite move the needle because you had these three who are at the peak. And we're at, you know, again, this is kind of a topic we've discussed, others have discussed. We're at this point where Nick Kyrgios is your top maybe men's draw outside of Rafa tomorrow on Monday, right? And understandably so. Taylor Fritz is the 11th seed.
Yeah,
you know, and he's going to be one of the featured stars of the Netflix documentary. We need to start paying attention to that more,
right?
And frankly,
do you think we're still, hanging on to the history of
was? 100% we're hanging on to history that doesn't
exist. I mean, Federer doesn't exist anymore. As much as we love him, if he manages to put a season together again, one season,
it would be
nearly a miracle.
Here's the thing, and I'm talking about media side here.
Yeah,
we need to do a better job of telling these other stories, though.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, Brandon Nakashima in the fourth round of you know, first time in the fourth round of Grand Slam a few years after he was number two in the world as a junior. You know, that's a big story. Taylor Fritz making this big push over the last year is a big story. Jason Kubler's story is phenomenal if you don't know it, and nobody's telling it right now, despite the fact that he's in the flipping fourth round of Wimbledon. So I think there needs to be a bit of a better job of telling some of the stories of these different athletes, their different play styles. We need to feature Brandon Nakashima a little bit more on ATP pieces and having them on center court as they're making their push up and understand that these are some fun stories to tell.
Yeah, it's difficult. It's funny because, you know, we in the podcast previous to Wimbledon's first round, we were talking about, you know, what would it mean to players making it through. We both thought that there were going to be an interesting draw leading into the second week, and we're correct with that.
Yeah.
You know, I don't really want to go into the conversation of, you know, how sad it is for a Kubler to not get points because we talk about the money is very important. I don't think there's a need for that right now, but I'm seeing the asterisk from people that didn't put it on it previous to the tournament, but now that the draw is here, they're saying, well, you know, for Americans, you know, that wouldn't have been the case. And okay, we could argue that, whatever the case.
You're referring to Ben Rothenberg's tweet yesterday where he said it was something
that
about...
That was one for sure. Yeah. But I saw many other people talking about just the fact that this is now not the tournament they want to watch because of the draw that it's here. And that's fine. That's their prerogative. But what does this mean for tennis now? Like, this could be the draws we see in the future. You know, it's not crazy. You know, this is not out of this world to see this fourth round again. So where does tennis lie?
I tend to be in the side where I'm excited about it.
Yeah.
The fact
and your excitement lies because of just new
the complete
people?
the more diversity of play styles, the diversity of stories. So we're not just telling Rafa and Roger again. Yeah. And again, don't get me wrong, it's been phenomenal. But on top of it, I mean, like, we haven't talked at all about the fact that, like, Bedosa and Halep is second on center court. That's a phenomenal matchup, right? I mean, you've got Anisimova, who knocked off Coco yesterday, right, was so good. And frankly, this is where we need to, you know, we talk about this Tennis United, whatever. Like, okay, your men's draw is not as good. Let's make sure we're focusing the hell out of the women's side. Let's talk more about Heather Watson and her first time this deep at Wimbledon. And I think the media needs to allow that this is okay. It's not bad. And because it is a top-down message. It's a top-down message.
I agree with you. Obviously, you know, early on with Behind the Racket was the initiative of trying to get those stories out.
Right.
You know, to connect. And
same with my podcast, frankly, when I was doing the coffee cast.
That coffee thing?
Fuck off.
And I never put, actually, I really didn't put the issue onto the media.
Mm-hmm.
But we have to understand that it's not, you know, especially in the world of tennis, where there are a lot of sheltered individuals. That's just how it is to perform the sport at a lot of levels. They have to help them. Help them realize who they are a little bit. Give them that little push. It doesn't mean, you know, that if you go through a year and you're not really getting anything out of it, that's fine. But give them that little helping hand to say, okay, who are you?
Yeah.
How can we make you interesting? You know, what is out there with, you know, with your story, with everything going on? And I think it's just not that natural for a lot of people to come into that light. I think Nakashima, super nice guy. He's not going to be the one, you know, putting out TikToks and, you know, sharing a story, you know, just willy-nilly. But, that didn't feel good going on a pod. I think it's just a little helping hand for some of these players.
I think a great example of it, Noah, is the fact, where did they put Cam Norrie? The British number one. Where did they put him for his first match? Was he on court two, court three, something? You know, and it's just right. Like, okay,
it's not Murray. You know,
yeah, it's just like, yes, you're right. Taylor Fritz is not Roger Federer. Okay,
or Roddick. Yeah,
or Roddick.
Yeah,
that's fine. But right. let's find out who he is so we can actually do a good job of promoting this next group of players that are going to be in the top five. You know, so much focus is on Carlos Alcaraz. Right now, as we're talking, he's down a set and a break to Jannik Sinner. And we haven't,
right.
Frankly, Jannik Sinner is not getting enough play because we're on to Carlos Alcaraz. Like, who's the next hope to be Novak, Roger, Rafa? And Jannik
Sinner. Does anybody know anything about Jannik Sinner?
Right, that was exactly my point. Like, we're so focused on Carlos Alcaraz. Like, Jannik Sinner is going to win multiple Grand Slams. There's no doubt in my mind about that. But yet we're just like, he's done. That guy's over.
Right, because we want the top of that. And you know, I'm a cynic. Hey, you're not as cynical as I am. And I agree. And I do enjoy bringing up the fact that we are going to be in a worse place. But it doesn't mean the saying, cut your nose to spite your face. We have things here. Use
yes,
them.
Agreed.
You know, now we move on. You know, yes, we acknowledge it's not going to be as good, but now how do we make adjustments?
Correct.
To use what we have, to use Jannik Sinner's forehand that literally there's nobody in the world that hits a bigger forehand than him.
Yeah.
We use that. Do something. Where is he from? What does he do? Anything. I mean.
Did you know he used to ski?
Okay, maybe a little more interesting than that.
I didn't also know as we wrap up, and you know, like, we should tell the story more about you and your floral prints that you're wearing right now, and more about how you should incorporate that style into your clothing line that you wear.
My wonderful
on court.
Girlfriend and I moved into a new apartment, and it's actually, people are super friendly, which is tough for me to be, as you know, but I actually might not need you anymore, which is great.
I didn't know you needed me before, but go on.
Oh, wow. So you're actually taking a compliment out of this?
Yes, I am.
Oh, God. Well,
okay. Why don't you need me anymore?
I'm just saying, like, I'm actually making friends.
Mm.
Right. And I just didn't think that was possible for Jamie and I. I mean, she's wonderful, but.
Well, that's the only reason they're being friends with you is to be friends with Jamie, because she's right. She's the likable one of the two. People that's will true. Tolerate you. That's what we all do, is we tolerate you.
You should bring back the mohawk.
I will, actually, in the off season.
Good.
Okay. I what I wanted to get to today that we don't have time to, because you have a birthday party to get to, and I really want us to actually spend some time on it, is betting in tennis.
Okay.
Coco did and we'll just hit on this for 1 minute. Coco did a TikTok last night about all of the messages she received after losing to Anisimova.
We never spoke about Sloane Stephens on top of that as well.
It's bad.
Yeah.
And frankly, the tours are not doing enough. They're taking in a lot of the money. The data rights and all of that is really important, and betting is going to help grow the sport. There's no doubt. And we need to do something to make sure players are protected, because somebody like you you talk about the lower ranked players who don't necessarily have an agent to filter out all those negative things on Instagram.
Where gambling is more prevalent.
Correct. We need to do a little bit more to help players at the lower levels in that regard. I want to talk about that in depth, and maybe we'll see if we can. Are you still going to Rome next week?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So maybe Sunday night we can put together a couple of people and actually have a little roundtable about that.
Okay. The one thing I will say is, if we looked in a checking account and it said $1, and it said for gambling,
yes,
we'd be okay with it.
Correct.
We'd be okay with the message coming through. But it is. It's the first thing I check, and I'm like, oh, God. And I don't even really care about the messages. My poor mom, who's been, wished death upon many, many times.
Right.
But I just don't want to delete them, because I don't want them on my Instagram, But if I knew that I was getting a dollar and it was directly coming from that, and not them just saying, it's in your prize money, prize money's decreasing. So, we'll get some people together, because we know – might be the only thing that everybody's on the same page about in the sport of tennis.
It's entirely possible. So that will be coming up this coming week, as both Noah and I head to Rome, Georgia, and we will talk to you from Rome next week.
Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at newbalance.com.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The show might be over, but the conversation isn't. Join us on social media at NoahRubin33, at MikeCTennis, and at Behind the Racket.
Expect new episodes every Monday or Tuesday. And don't forget to leave us a rating on iTunes. It really helps us expand and reach more listeners as we take you behind the racket.